The first time I watched the work, I realized that I was witnessing something truly remarkable. What I saw was a succession of people, young and old, educated and uneducated, who were learning to question their own thoughts, the thoughts that were most painful to them. With the lovingly incisive help of Byron Katie, everyone calls her Katie, these people were finding their way not only toward the resolution of their immediate problems, but also toward a state of mind in which the deepest questions are resolved. I've spent a good part of my life studying and translating the classic texts of the great spiritual traditions, and I recognized something very similar in process here. At the core of these traditions, in works such as the Book of Job, the Tao Te Ching, and the Bhagavad Gita, there is an intense questioning about life and death, and a profound, joyful wisdom that emerges as an answer. That wisdom, it seemed to me, was the place Katie was standing in, and the direction where these people were headed. As I watched from my seat in a crowded community center, five men and women, one after another, were learning freedom through the very thoughts that had caused their suffering. Thoughts such as, "My husband betrayed me," or "My mother doesn't love me enough." Simply by asking four questions and listening to the answers they found inside themselves, these people were opening their minds to profound, spacious, and life-transforming insights. I saw a man who had been suffering for decades from anger and resentment toward his alcoholic father light up before my eyes within 45 minutes. I saw a woman who had been almost too frightened to speak because she had just found out that her cancer was spreading end the session in a glow of understanding and acceptance. Three out of the five people had never done the work before, yet the process didn't seem to be more difficult for them than it was for the other two, nor were their realizations any less profound. They all began by realizing a truth so basic that it is usually invisible, the fact that, in the words of the Greek philosopher Epictetus, we are disturbed not by what happens to us, but by our thoughts about what happens. As soon as they grasped that truth, their whole understanding changed. Before people have experienced the work of Byron Katie for themselves, they often think that it is too simple to be effective. But its simplicity is precisely what makes it so effective. Over the past 2 years, since first encountering it and meeting Katie, I have done the work many times on thoughts I hadn't even been aware of. And I've watched more than 1,000 people do it in public events across the United States and Europe, on the whole gamut of human problems, from major illnesses, the deaths of parents and children, sexual and psychological abuse, addictions, financial insecurity, professional problems, and social issues, to the usual frustrations of daily life. Having a reserved seat at all Katie's events is one of the privileges of being married to her. Again and again, I have seen the work quickly and radically transform the way people think about their problems. And as the thinking changes, the problems disappear. Suffering is optional, Katie says. Whenever we experience a stressful feeling, anything from mild discomfort to intense sorrow, rage, or despair, we can be certain that there is a specific thought causing our reaction, whether or not we are conscious of it. The way to end our stress is to investigate the thinking that lies behind it, and anyone can do this by himself with a piece of paper and a pen. Through the work, Katie also calls it inquiry, we discover that all the concepts and judgments that we believe or take for granted are distortions of things as they really are. When we believe our thoughts instead of what is really true for us, we experience the kinds of emotional distress that we call suffering. Suffering is a natural alarm, warning us that we're attaching to a thought. When we don't listen, we come to accept this suffering as an inevitable part of life. It's not. The work has striking similarities with the Zen koan and the Socratic dialogue, but it doesn't stem from any tradition, Eastern or Western. It is American, homegrown, and mainstream, having originated in the mind of an ordinary woman who had no intention of originating anything. The work was born on a February morning in 1986 when Byron Kathleen Reed, a 43-year-old woman from a small town in the high desert of Southern California, woke up on the floor of a halfway house. In the midst of an ordinary life, two marriages, three children, a successful career, Katie had entered a 10-year-long downward spiral into rage, paranoia, and despair. For 2 years, she was so depressed that she could seldom manage to leave her house. She stayed in bed for weeks at a time, doing business by telephone from her bedroom, unable even to bathe or brush her teeth. Her children would tiptoe past her door to avoid her outbursts of rage. Finally, she checked into a halfway house for women with eating disorders, the only facility that her insurance company would pay for. The other residents were so frightened of her that she was placed alone in an attic room. One morning, a week or so later, as she lay on the floor, she had been feeling too unworthy to sleep in a bed. Katie woke up without any concepts of who or what she was.
There was no me. All my rage, all the thoughts that had been troubling me, my whole world, the whole world, was gone. At the same time, laughter welled up from the depths and just poured out. Everything was unrecognizable. It was as if something else had woken up. It opened its eyes. It was looking through Katie's eyes. And it was so delighted. It was intoxicated with joy. There was nothing separate, nothing unacceptable to it. Everything was its very own self.
When Katie returned home, her family and friends felt that she was a different person. Her daughter, Roxanne, who was 16 at the time, says,
"We knew that the constant storm was over. She had always yelled at me and my brothers and criticized us. I used to be scared to be in the same room with her. Now she seemed completely peaceful. She would sit still for hours on the window seat or out in the desert. She was joyful and innocent, like a child, and she seemed to be filled with love. People in trouble started knocking on our door, asking her for help. She would sit with them and ask them questions, mainly, 'Is it true?' When I would come home miserable with a problem like, 'My boyfriend doesn't love me anymore,' Mom would look at me as if she knew that it wasn't possible, and she would ask me, 'Honey, how could that be true?' As if I just told her that we were living in China."
Once people understood that the old Katie wasn't coming back, they began to speculate about what had happened to her. Had some miracle occurred? She wasn't much help to them. It was a long time before she could describe her experience intelligibly. She would talk about a freedom that had woken up inside her. She also said that, through an inner questioning, she had realized that all her old thoughts were untrue. Shortly after Katie got back from the halfway house, her home began to fill with people who had heard about her and had come to learn. She was able to communicate her inner inquiry in the form of specific questions that anyone who wanted freedom could apply on his own, without her. Soon she began to be invited to meet with small gatherings in people's living rooms. Her hosts often asked her if she was enlightened. She would answer, "I'm just someone who knows the difference between what hurts and what doesn't." In 1992, she was invited to Northern California, and the work spread very fast from there. Katie accepted every invitation. She has been on the road almost constantly since 1993, demonstrating the work in church basements, community centers, and hotel meeting rooms, in front of small and large audiences. Admission is always free. And the work has found its way into all kinds of organizations, from corporations, law firms, and therapists' offices, to hospitals, prisons, churches, and schools. It is now popular in other parts of the world where Katie has traveled. All across America and Europe, there are groups of people who meet regularly to do the work. After doing the work, many people report an immediate sense of release and freedom from thoughts that were making them miserable. But if the work depended on a momentary experience, it would be far less useful than it is. The work is an ongoing and deepening process of self-realization, not a quick fix. It's more than a technique, Katie says. It brings to life, from deep within us, an innate aspect of our being. The deeper you go into the work, the more powerful you realize it is. People who have been practicing inquiry for a while often say, "The work is no longer something I do. It is doing me." They describe how, without any conscious intention, the mind notices each stressful thought and undoes it before it can cause any suffering. Their internal argument with reality has disappeared, and they find that what remains is love, love for themselves, for other people, and for whatever life brings. The title of this book describes their experience. Loving what is becomes as easy and natural as breathing. I've waited until now to introduce the four questions to you because they don't make much sense out of context. The best way to meet them is to see how they function in an actual example of the work. In the dialogue excerpt that you'll hear in a few minutes, I will point out to you each of the four questions as they appear. I'll also point out what Katie calls the turnaround, which is a way of experiencing the opposite of what you believe is true. This dialogue was recorded at an event that took place in 2001 before an audience of about 300 people. Justin, like the other people who attended this event, has filled out a one-page worksheet that asked him to write down his thoughts about someone who upsets him, a situation, past or present, that feels unresolved in his life. The instructions on the worksheet are: allow yourself to be as judgmental and petty as you really feel. Don't try to be spiritual or kind. The pettier we can be when writing, the more likely it is that we'll benefit from the work. Justin has volunteered to sit on stage with Katie and investigate each statement he has written. If at any time you feel uncomfortable with the questioning, it helps to remember that all the participants, the person doing the work, Katie, and the audience, are on the same side here. All of them are looking for the truth. If Katie ever seems to be mocking or derisive, you'll realize upon closer examination that she's making fun of the thought that is causing a person's suffering, never of the person sitting with her. Don't worry if anything seems confusing at first. For now, just get a general feel for the questions and the process of inquiry.
Okay, sweetie, what's going on? Thought appears.
Yep.
So what to do? Let's examine it.
I've been dealing with this for a long, long, long time. I find the roots deep in my past. I've been fighting it for as long as I can remember.
Yes.
I've been searching gurus, I've been praying, I've been meditating, I've been doing many, many things.
Well, let's take a look at inquiry.
Okay.
Let's look at what you've written.
I am angry and confused and saddened by my family because they judge me. I am angry that there is a mold that is placed before me. I am irritated by my family and acquaintances thinking that their path is the only way. It saddens me when I receive the most love, when I assume the predestined pattern and to sort of follow the way they think things should be for me.
Yes. Familiar so far? You're on one end or the other. You're either the parent or the child, or you've been both. The next one.
I want my family to be who they are and not limit their love and attention according to their perception and idea of my progress. I want them to accept me as I learn my own truth in my own life and love me for having found parts of my own truth and foundation.
So, sweetheart, read the first one again.
I am confused and saddened by my family because they judge me.
Okay. So parents should not judge their children? Is that true?
This is the first question. Is it true?
So parents should not judge their children? Is that true?
Oh, gosh.
Can you absolutely know that that's true?
When the answer to is it true is not a clear no, The second question, can you absolutely know that it's true, invites people to inquire more deeply.
Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No.
And the job of a parent, the job of everyone in this world is to judge. That's our job.
Right.
What else is there? Everything's a judgment. Give me a thought that is not a judgment. It's a sky. That's a judgment. It's what we do. Parents should not judge their children. What's the reality of it, do they?
Yes.
That's their job. How do you react when you think that thought? My parents are not supposed to judge me.
This is the third question. How do you react when you think that thought?
How do you react when you think that thought? My parents are not supposed to judge me.
Well, it weakens me because I feel that I need to... I don't know, I disagree with some of the things that I've been taught. And
okay, let's stay in inquiry. How do you react when you think that thought? It weakens you.
It weakens
what else?
Me. It stops me right in my steps and I feel terrified.
Yeah. How do you treat your parents when you think that thought? I want you to stop judging me, and they do it.
I rebel and I become distant, and that's been my past so far.
Honey, this is insanity. People should stop judging people. What planet do you think you're on? Make yourself at home here. It's the opposite. You come to planet Earth, you judge. That's it. You know, it's a nice place to visit once you get the ground rules down. But this is a direct opposition to what's really happening. This is crazy. Who would you be without this thought? I want my parents to stop judging me.
This is the fourth question. Who would you be without the thought?
Who would you be without this thought? I want my parents to stop judging me.
I would have inner peace.
Yeah, it's called playing with a full deck.
Yeah.
I'm a lover of reality. How do I know I'm better off? It's what is. Parents judge, that's it. You've had a lifetime of proof to know that this is truer. So honey, turn it around.
I am confused and saddened by me because I judge me.
Yes, and there's another one? I'm confused and sad?
I'm confused and saddened
because
by me because I judge my parents and my family?
Yes.
This is what Katie calls the turnaround. It's a chance to experience alternatives to the original statement that may be as true or truer. You'll learn more about turnarounds later.
So, honey, turn it around. Read it the way you wrote it.
I am confused and saddened by me because I judge me.
Yes, and there's another one? I'm confused and sad?
I'm confused and saddened.
Because
by me, because I judge my parents and my family?
Yes. So here, I'll strike a deal with you. When you stop judging them, then go talk to them about judgment.
That's true.
When you stop doing what you want them to stop doing, let's talk.
Okay.
In Loving What Is, Katie has given you everything you need in order to do the work by yourself or with others. The audiobook will guide you step by step through the whole process. Along the way, you'll hear the dialogue with Justin in its entirety and further examples of people doing the work with Katie. These one-on-one dialogues, in which Katie brings her clarity to the most complicated human problems, are dramatic examples of how ordinary people can find their own freedom through inquiry.